welcome to Overtime the Podcast. Overtime is a podcast dedicated to all things watches, particularly in the micro brand and affordable range. I'm Prakka, and this is my co-host, Justin.
We are two watch enthusiasts based out of Perth, Western Australia. Join us as we discuss our thoughts on new releases, share our personal experiences, and offer our insights on building a collection.
Whether you're a seasoned enthusiast or just starting your journey, Overtime will keep you entertained with informative insights and casual conversations.
Let's get started.
G'day, listeners. Something a little bit different today. Yes, as you notice, didn't start off with our usual. So, Justin, how are you going? A little bit different today, running a solo episode. So it's been a fairly busy week and weekend. We've just had an Easter weekend. Whether you celebrate or don't celebrate Easter, it's still a fairly busy, long weekend. And especially in Australia, we seem to take that long weekend and, you know, spend some good quality time with family and friends. And basically, we've just been quite busy. And in all that business and, I guess, schedules not really quite lining up, couldn't quite make an episode this week. But I didn't want to leave you guys hanging, the listeners, without an episode for a little while. So I figured, hey, why don't we do something a little bit different today and run a solo episode with, I guess, a focus on some questions. So again, before we get too further into the episode, let's start off with the wrist check for today. So just a wrist check. I've been wearing my Oris Diver 65 Glow today. Yeah, there's really not a lot to say about this watch apart from it's a fantastic little piece. You know, everything from the dome, sapphire, that somehow gives a vintage vibe to it. So basically, a lot of the vintage divers have, I guess, plexiglass or some sort of acrylic crystal that gives that warm feeling. And also that dome has that vintage feeling to it. But Oris have done a great job on this piece to replicate that using a sapphire crystal. Now, I don't know how they did it, but they did it fantastically. And yeah, I mean, the vintage tapering bracelet from 20 mil to 16 mil is just... yeah, it's different. I think it's 14 mil. Yeah, it's 20 to 14. So it's a really aggressive taper. Probably the most aggressive one out there. But yes, definitely a fantastic dive watch. Great to have. And it spent the day on my wrist today. So yeah, I guess before we move on and get into today's episode, which is really just a question and answer type session, I just want to thank a lot of the watch fam out there. You know who you are. Thanks for your support and thanks for asking those questions that I will be discussing today. A lot of them were, yeah, so a few of them were sent in from some of the watch fam and a few stemmed from the many discussions that I have, you know, expanding my knowledge about watches. So again, sorry to delay the questions, but just wanted to say that, you know, Justin and I have... loads of exciting stuff coming this year, this season. We've got, you know, more interviews coming with brand owners. We even got some more collaborations, some interesting collaborations coming with a particular YouTuber, which is going to be very exciting. I won't give away too much. And also an interview with a bespoke watchmaker and jeweler, which is a bit different to, I guess, all the micro brands and I guess even established brands that we've spoken to so far. So yeah, really looking forward to some of those this coming year. All right. So without further ado, let's get into the first of the episode. Sorry, the first of the questions. So I was asked about micro brands. Obviously we talk a lot about micro brands in this podcast. Justin and I have a real passion for it. And this all sort of came from the back of a tournament that was done the last couple of weeks. I think it was about a week or maybe 2 weeks. So the website Watch Crunch, for the guys not too familiar, about Watch Crunch, or the listeners who aren't too familiar about Watch Crunch. Basically, it's a website for watch enthusiasts. So kind of like, think Instagram, but very focused on watches, but also think like Reddit watches or what you seek. So it's kind of like a combination of it all, and it works pretty well. I enjoy using the platform, although I probably don't use it as much as I would like to. But recently they held a tournament called a micro tournament. So this is not their first iteration. They've done it twice before, and I believe Farah and Formex have won it before. So basically it's like a community led competition that you can just vote for, and it's like a head to head. And it happens in March. So it's kind of like, it's an American thing called March Madness. We do have many American listeners, so you guys would be very familiar with this, but the rest of our listeners worldwide may not quite understand what I'm talking about when I say March Madness. So March Madness is like a tournament, I understand, like a basketball tournament, NCAA, which is the sort of college basketball tournament. That happens in March, and it's huge. It's massive. I think it might extend to American football as well, but I definitely know it's a basketball tournament. And yeah, actually, if any listeners are familiar with that and would like to chime in, you know, hit me up on Instagram and let me know. Is it to do with football as well? I'll be very curious. But anyway, moving on. So it was, you know, it's a bit of a, I guess, a lighthearted, fun poll that they did, and it was like a, you know, round robin tournament. Oh, sorry, it was like a head to head tournament, and then whoever comes right to the end of the championship wins. So it was pretty cool. There's about 64 micro brands in this latest iteration, and the winning brand was Baltic. Baltic is a brand that we've spoken about plenty of times, and I think for a micro brand, they're pretty well known now. So I thought it was very interesting that the final of the tournament came down to Baltic and Laurier, and it sort of sparked a thought in my head, and it segues into the first question: what are the most important factors you consider when evaluating a new microbrand watch for your collection? So I found it really interesting that Baltic won over Laurier in this tournament, and I guess the interesting part is not the fact that they won, but the reasonings behind it, that many people voted for Baltic over Laurier. And I think both watch brands are very similar in terms of aesthetics, and probably one of the most important factors I would say when evaluating a new micro brand watch for my collection is the aesthetics, how it looks. If I'm chasing a watch with a vintage vibe, these two brands are perfect for it. Laurier and Baltic, they're both vintage inspired watches, and they all draw from various watches that have been released in the past, whether it be in the 60s, the 70s, and they do it really well. So Baltic, a French brand, Laurier, an American brand. And I think aesthetically, they're both very similar, even though they have their different models and different brands, but again, very similar, which I thought was very interesting. And again, one factor. Factor two. So this isn't really necessarily a factor for me. I would say it's more a factor for a lot of the people that voted for Baltic in this tournament is the sapphire crystal. Which, so Laurier is famous, infamous, I guess, depending on how you want to see it, for not using sapphire crystal in their watches. They only use acrylic. And this is really a nod to vintage watches. Vintage watches have acrylic crystal, and it has that warm feeling. So if you think back to the start of the episode, where I discussed my Oris Diver 65, that crystal replicates a little bit of that. But in saying that, it's not the same as an acrylic crystal in terms of that warmness, that sort of real vintage vibe to it. And I think that turns off some people because they see the value propositions that a lot of watches bring nowadays. Like we're talking, you know, AliExpress watches like San Martin or Boltony or, you know, Proxima, there's Kronos, there's so many different AliExpress homage brands. They all offer, you know, even Steel Dive at you know, $100, $200 with full or your, you know, you name it, sapphire, crystal, ceramic, bezel, everything. So they give you a lot of spec for your money. So I think that turns off people when they think, you know, hey, I'm paying $600 for a watch, I expect sapphire crystal. And that was interesting because a lot of people said the same thing. And they said, no, you know what? If you don't want sapphire, sorry, if you don't give sapphire for a price that's, you know, that at this price range, then we're not going to buy your, we're not going to buy a watch, which I thought was interesting. And for me, I don't see that as a big factor. I tend to wear my watches quite carefully. Even my quote unquote, quote beater watches, I don't tend to beat around my watches that much. Maybe my G-Shock, but even then, you know, a little bit. In saying that, on the weekend, did a little bit of plumbing and a little bit of just some work around the house, and I had my SPB on my wrist. And for most parts, I was fine with it. It was, you know, no issues. And then when I was getting towards a tight spot and I was removing some stuff and I was like, oh, you know, I don't really want to knock and scratch this watch around too much. And then I took it off. But for most parts, you know, I'm fairly careful with my watch. So I don't really, it doesn't really bother me if it's acrylic or sapphire. But I get that. I get the whole value proposition thing. So I guess another factor, I mean, we talked about two factors there, which is about the, I guess, the specs and then also the aesthetics. I guess another factor is the uniqueness of the watch. There's so many micro brands out there, right? But I think we're in an era now where we're spoilt for choice as collectors, especially as buyers. We have so much choice out there, whether it be micro brands or even traditional brands, and also, you know, Kickstarter brands, AliExpress. There's just so much choice out there. So really having something unique, a differentiator, a different design, or, you know, something a bit more different is what I chased, I guess, as a factor. In saying that, my collection's pretty vanilla. I don't have, you know, crazy out there looking watches. I don't have Richard Mille lookalikes and stuff like that. That's just not my style. However, you know, I want something which has a point of difference. Like there's only so many NH35, you know, stock standard divers that, you know, that you can get in your collection, I think. And it's nice to have something a bit different. So I think, yeah, so when it boils down, it's the aesthetics. What am I chasing? Am I chasing a dress aesthetic or a vintage vibe or a diver type vibe? Am I chasing? And then the specs, of course, it's important, and really a point of difference, uniqueness. And of course, like anything in life, the price, if it works or not, or if I think it's a good value proposition, then I would get it. All right. So started off with micro brands, which is our wheelhouse, and want to move into something a little bit different, which is, I guess, what are my thoughts on the increasing popularity of vintage watches in recent years? Okay, so this is a good one. So yeah, thanks for this question, watch fam. So I think it's a good thing. And it's probably one of the reasons why I'm into vintage watches as well. Vintage watches, the things I like about vintage watches is, one, you get really classic designs, and especially someone with a small wrist. Like I have a 6.4-inch wrist, I would say. And a lot of the vintage watches just wear really well on my wrist. And they have a clean, classic design most of the times. Even the 70s, which was a bit wilder, the designs still had some really clean designs. And I really get drawn to that. And I think as well, people chasing sort of I guess more smaller proportions would look at vintage watches. And I think that's a good way of getting, it's a good reason to get into vintage watches. I think secondly as well, value proposition. Like you can pick up, vintage Omegas or vintage, older vintage Seikos, or even we're looking at, Universal Genève. Well, maybe not quite now, but in a few years ago, you could pick up some really good stuff for a really reasonable price comparing to its modern counterparts. And I think it's awesome. It's great. And this is something about a classic, a vintage watch. It's charming. It's dressy, and it doesn't necessarily even have to be a dress piece. Like even old vintage divers just have a dressy vibe to it, and you can dress it up or dress it down, and it just looks great. And but I think on the flip side of that, the servicing and the upkeep of a vintage watch is something to really consider. You can pick up a vintage Seiko for, I don't know, $300, $400, as cheap as 300-400 Australian dollars, or depending on which it is, like a 6109 or 6139s and all these sort of Pogues and all that, they're going to obviously fetch more because they have a story to it and a bit more of a history to it. But in saying that, most parts you can pick it up fairly cheaply. But what people don't realize is a lot of these watches, there's not a lot of service history or anything like that. And who knows what's on the inside of these movements? They could have water damage. They could be, never been serviced before. And I think I probably spoke about this before on the podcast, but one of my very first vintage watch was a watch that I bought sight unseen. And thankfully, when it came, it worked. Not very well, but it worked. Wasn't really keeping power reserve or anything like that, and I had to go get it serviced. And I'm very lucky that I had a watchmaker close by that could service this vintage Seiko. It's then that's the reality of the situation is watchmakers is a dying trade, which is really sad considering the amount of new watch enthusiasts into. So much more enthusiasts into this hobby, or what I can see of anyway. I think, the rise of Apple watches and smartwatches, the like, definitely going to segue people to try, traditional watches, your mechanicals, even quartz watches, just and not having, majority of the watchmakers that I've been to, I've seen mostly older gentlemen, or and really. You don't see a lot of the younger guys coming through, and maybe this is just the part of the world that I'm in, but it is quite, I guess, a bit sad when it comes down to that. So, if you do get vintage watches, and most of the time vintage watches, you will need proper servicing to make sure they keep running. You may not, these watchmakers that know how to service watches, especially vintage watches, may not be around. Maybe a bit harder to find. So I, like I said, I was lucky and I got mine serviced at a reasonable cost, and it's been ticking since then fantastically. And it's one of those watches that I will never get rid of my collection. But yeah, I think that's my thoughts really. I think it's great that the popularity is increasing, but I think the fact that we are losing watchmakers, or maybe we're not getting enough watchmakers coming through the trade is a bit of a bummer. But in saying that, there are a lot of great new micro brands popping up with, either watchmakers that are starting it or they've getting into watchmaking as a trade after they've started their brand, which is really cool to see. So hopefully that inspires a new generation of watchmakers to go out there, or people to go out there and study watchmaking as a trade. I wouldn't personally because my dexterity is terrible, and I don't think I will. Well, maybe not now, maybe in the future. But I really, yeah, shout out to all the watchmakers out there. You guys are champions, and thank you for making the watches that we enjoy, or well, at least designing them in some cases, because yes, there is a thing called industrialization and manufacturing, which many companies have done very well. Okay, I'll move on to the next question, which I guess is a question about purchasing. Yes, so this is a great one. So heart versus head purchase. So what does that mean? I guess, how much are you influenced by your heart when buying a watch, even if you know the watch is maybe not so appealing to the masses? And if you do decide to move it on in the future, you're probably not going to move it on. You're going to struggle to move it on. Or even if you do, it's going to be a really cut price. Yeah, I really liked this question because personally, I've had this dilemma before where you see a watch pop up secondhand in a forum or a marketplace or Gumtree or somewhere along those lines. And you go, oh, that's really cool. I really like that. Or I really like the idea of that. And you get instant attraction to it. And you go, yep, now I'm going to get this. And then your head steps in and then goes, oh, hang on a minute. Do you need this? What makes this so different to everything else you've got? When will you wear it? Are you going to enjoy it when it comes in? Do you think you need to think about it a bit more? All these questions pop up in your head. I guess for me, I've always been a very good buyer, if that makes sense. I've always been a very informed buyer for most parts. I like to do a lot of research on whatever I get, whether it be fridges or, you know, computer stuff or whatever it is. And I think Justin and I have touched on this before slightly, but when it comes to watches, for most parts, I do think about it, but sometimes there'll be a bargain that pops up. Go, oh, this looks cool and I like it, and I'll just grab it. I have done that before. So the heart said, yes, you need that. And I've been lucky in most parts, even if I didn't quite bond to the watch, once I did receive it, I've managed to move it on and haven't had a significant loss and stuff. So I guess I'm lucky in that sense. But I have, the person who asked me this question did send me a photo of a watch that they did purchase with their bit of their heart, I guess, and really wants, you know, really likes the look of it, I guess, or the appeal. However, it is quite, how would I put it aptly? A bit on the ugly side, a bit eccentric, bit different. And maybe, you know, if the watch isn't quite for them, later moving it on later on might be a bit hard and probably going to be in a heavy loss. So yeah, I think for most parts, I have been influenced by the heart before, and I have had to move on watches just like that. But in saying that, I've had the exact opposite effect. I mean, I've, for example, my Dorenzo, I really like the look of it. I've been looking at the Dorenzo DRZ4 Mondial. I really like the color. I really wanted a purple dialed watch. We've, Justin and I, as I think our second episode of this podcast was about purple dialed watches. We were really, you know, really wanted a purple dialed watch even before that. And then it just so happened to be that it popped up, and it was insane because Justin and I were just talking about it and it came up, and it wasn't really a decision. It wasn't a decision that was, you know, that I took a long time to think about, or, you know, pros and cons and how will I wear this? When will I wear this? Is the size going to be okay for my wrist? Is the case size all right? Is the lug to lug okay? I looked at it. It came up for sale. It was a really good price. And I went, bang, I'm buying it. And I just went, yep, I'll get it, mate. Got it. And when I first received it, I was like, oh, have I made a mistake here? Have I bought something which I like the thought of, or I guess the feeling of, oh, yep, I've hit the purple watch, you know, I've got Dorenzo, which is a fantastic micro brand. I've heard so much good things about it. And then I've gone, oh, yeah, so I'm not sure when I put it on my wrist. I don't know how it looks. I don't know if it quite fits me as well as I should. And then my head, you know, kicked in. My head was like, oh, you know, you should have thought about the dimensions. You should have thought about how it wore. Did you? And then it made me really rethink my purchase. But in saying that, in not too long at all, I was like, you know what? I'm really enjoying this. And even though it didn't hit those preset criteria that I had in my head, these are the things that you need to check off before you have a good watch or a good watch for yourself. And yeah, it actually didn't hit a lot of those usual check markers or points that I have, but I still enjoyed it. And I think that's the great part of watch collecting. You know, you'll be surprised. You will be surprised at what you think you like. And that's why it's awesome if you can get hands-on in different watches. I mean, a lot of watches that I purchase I buy sight unseen, and it's just the reality of where Dustin and I live. We live in a very isolated part of the world, and there's not many sort of access to many of the brands that we like. However, been lucky enough in the last couple of years where we've met some really great people in events such as in a group called Red Bar, which is a worldwide watch collecting, I guess, enthusiast group. And we've met some really cool people who have some really cool watches. So we get to try different pieces, and then you really get an idea of, oh yeah, this is really nice. And I would never think I would put that on my wrist and go, yeah, that actually works really well on me. So yeah, I guess my advice to all the listeners out there, if you think that you might not quite like a certain style or a certain, you know, this watch is going to be too big for me, or this watch is going to be too small for me, give it a go. Go to your AD if you have one near you that has that. Go to a trade show. Go to a, you know, there's, in especially to our listeners in the US, you know, you've got so many fantastic shows that are around. Like, you know, you've got the Wind Up Watch Fairs, you've got Intersect, which are two shows that are just, you know, just finished up, and I'm sure there's plenty more in America. You know, the US is there's plenty out there. Even in Europe as well, there's some really cool shows out there. And you know, go check it out and go join your local watch collectors group. I'm sure there's many out there. And if it's anything like the watch collectors group that I'm part of, they'll be more than happy to show you the pieces, and they will love to, yeah, share and chat about watches. Okay. All right. So that was a great question. Thank you for that. Let us move on to the next question. So what motivates you to collect? Oh, okay. This is, again, thank you very much for the question. You know who you are. How's your collection evolved, and how do you see it evolving over time? Is it a seasonal thing? Like, is there a period in your life where collecting gives you focus or escape? Wow, this is a very deep question, and probably a question that I should have left. I should probably start it a bit earlier, not leaving it right to the end. But in saying that, I guess let's kick off. So I guess what motivates me to collect? Well, Justin and I spoke about this last episode. I guess in the last 3 and a bit months, probably in the last 4 months now, I've really slowed down on my watch purchases. Is that a factor of just the global economy and all that? But maybe, you know, I'm very careful with my purchases in the sense that I only spend, you know, what I've saved, what I have, and you know, I sell to fund it, and you know, I find ways to scrounge up money in order for me to purchase my watch. I don't splurge per se. You know, I have somewhat of a discipline in that. But in terms of collection, of how I curate my collection, so I actually spoke about this, I guess, not too long ago on a YouTube channel that I featured on. It's called Three Watch Collection. So we had a round table with myself, Vincent, and Chris, the owner of the channel, about, I guess, our collections and a couple of different questions. I'll leave a link to the show in the show notes. And one of the questions was about collecting, you know, like, is a three watch collection enough? And for me, obviously, that's a no. But one of it was, I guess, while I was answering that question, I sort of spoke about what motivates me to collect, or how did I end up where I am now, and how do I see it going? I think the thing is, where I am right now is I still feel that I'm in that finding my feet stage. You know, I've been doing this for a couple of years now, but I still feel like I don't quite have my set collection per se. And to be honest, I don't think I ever will. I enjoy the variety too much to have a limited collection. I like to being able to try different things, and especially for micro brands as well. I do have my core pieces in my collection that one mean a lot to me, or my keepers. And then I've also got stuff that I, you know, not so much sentimental value, but I just really like the watch. I really love the watch. And for all accounts, I won't get rid of it. Like, for example, my Palios C4th or my Christopher War GMT. You know, in terms of, I guess, sentimental value, that it's not so much as my SPB 143 or my Lord Matic, like, which have more, or my Tissot Gentleman, which have more sentimental value to me. But in saying that, it's still watches that I will keep or want to keep. And I guess if you're looking at it in terms of a collection or a, you know, a theme or a thematic stuff, it's not really that. It's just my watches. So I don't really think that it's an evolution, but it's not an evolution to a certain type of collection, if that makes sense, listeners. And yeah, feel free to roast me, by the way. I was just saying before I started this episode, and we had a bit of a laugh with Justin over message, you know, I'll see how I go myself. So anyway, what I'm trying to get at is, basically, I don't see my collection as being limited, or is it going to stop evolving? I don't think so. I think it's going to keep evolving. I'm going to have a few pieces that are sort of core and collection / keepers, but I just see pieces going out, going in, and over, you know, as long as I do this. And right now, I see it still going. I don't see myself stopping anytime soon. Don't really see an exit watch or anything like that. I have spoken about Grail watches before, but I don't think, for me, a Grail watch means an exit watch. I just think it means, you know, it's the one watch, you know, the Holy Grail that's almost impossible to get. But when you do get it, it's, wow, here we go. We've hit it now. We've got it. Which if you guys, listeners, go to our Q&A, last Q&A episode, we speak about our Grails, Justin and I. But yeah, so I don't think my collection is going to stop evolving over time. So isn't a seasonal thing? Like, is there a period in your life where collecting gives you focus, escape? Haven't really thought about it that way. I think I enjoy the watch collecting hobby. I enjoy the thrill of the hunt. I enjoy the reading up, the chase, the chasing a particular watch, or knowing more about a particular watch, or really the, I guess the biggest part is the community behind this. I've always been a very social person, whether it be, you know, when I was younger, I guess playing MMORPGs and things like that. I've always been drawn to the activity because of the social aspect of it, you know, discussing with people and, you know, being able to share stories and being able to just, you know, just have conversations with people. And that's what really drew me to watch collecting more so than just the watches itself. So I don't think it's an escape by any means. I feel like, for me, it's just a part of who I am. I'm quite social, and I enjoy that. And I feel like watches is an outlet of that. And also this podcast. Yes, it's just, you know, majority of the time it's just Justin and myself talking and someone else, but we enjoy that. We really enjoy that aspect of being able to discuss and learn new things and give, you know, share our experiences to you listeners out there who care enough to listen to us, which is, again, till this day, is mind-boggling that we have the amount of listeners that we do and the locations in the world that we're reaching. So yeah, big thank you to all our listeners out there. We love the support. And yeah, that sort of, I guess, wraps up the questions today. So yeah, thanks for persevering just throughout this episode, just listening to myself. I know it's a bit different, it's a bit strange, but we will be back to our regular scheduled programming not too long. But until then, you know, I guess we wanted to do this. Okay, so we like to, I guess, always talk about something interesting section. And I do have something interesting to talk about. In fact, it was a Facebook marketplace purchase. So a friend of mine, a buddy of mine, is selling a Seiko, I think it's a Seiko Baby Alpinus on marketplace. And for those who've used marketplace, it's a bit of a minefield. You can get some really good people that you deal with, and I've been very lucky. I have many good people I've dealt with, but you could also get some really strange offers and just a bad time overall, scams and you name it. And I think that's goes with any online marketplace, whether it be, you know, Gumtree, eBay, not so much, but yeah, maybe like a Craigslist in America or something like that. So my mate got a trade offer for his Baby Alpinus, and this is quite common in the watch collecting, and maybe we might get into this into another episode, but you know, I guess trades versus just a straight cash sale. So this person wanted to trade their fishing skiff for the Baby Alpinus, and yeah, Baby Alpinus, and cash their way for a fishing skiff. So what's a fishing skiff? I didn't know this, and the best person to talk about this is unfortunately not here today. Justin would know all about it. It's basically like a small boat. It's like a tiny boat that's used for recreational activities, and this is for fishing. And this person wanted to swap their watch, or my mate's watch, for a boat, and some, yeah, I guess the watch and cash for a boat. Yeah. Probably one of the strangest swaps that I have encountered, and I don't know what the outcome of it is. We'll discuss it in the next episode. But I think who knows? Maybe he might take up the offer. But that's all I knew before I started this episode. So I'll be very interested to see. And yeah, so you know, hit me up. Let us know what strange offers have you got for a watch. Definitely have seen some other trade offers before. I think a car. Justin said that he got offered a car once as well for a watch. So yeah, it's a boat, car. What else? I'll be curious to see. Okay, well, you know, we've come to the end of our episode. Thanks for tuning in. And if there's nothing else, we'll leave it there.
Thank you for joining us on Overtime the Podcast. We hope you enjoyed this episode.
You can find us on our Instagrams at Overtime the Podcast, at Kinda Average Watches, and at Horology Capture.
We appreciate your support and value your feedback. If you have any questions, suggestions, or topics you'd like us to cover in future episodes, please hit us up. We would love to hear from you.
Until next time.